Hi, this is Hugh Cornwell, and welcome to this Mr. DeMille FM podcast. If you have any comments, suggestions, or simply want to get in touch, then please email info@mrdemillefm.com. In this programme, we look at the birth and development of the swords and sandals genre. I hope you enjoy the show. What with the mounting anticipation preceding Christopher Nolan's version of The Odyssey, I thought it may be a good idea to look at the whole genre, loosely referred to as swords and sandals. It kicked off in the silent era when Cecil B. DeMille, our namesake saint, made a trilogy of films, the first two of which were silent, The Ten Commandments in 1923 and The King of Kings in 1927, and then The Sign of the Cross in 1932. Once he'd wrapped The Ten Commandments, DeMille was paranoid that rival producers would use his lavish sets and release a similar picture before his was finished, so he instructed for the sets to be destroyed and buried in the desert outside of Los Angeles. They remained so until 1982, when Peter Brosnan began a quest to unearth and preserve them. The fruits of his 30 years of dedicated work are documented in The Lost City of Cecil B. DeMille, a fascinating documentary and a must-see for anyone interested in film history.
I'm
The third film in his trilogy, The Sign of the Cross, was one of the first films to use sound, and it's still one of the best Swords and Sandals films ever made. DeMille cast Claudette Colbert against type as the man-eating Popeye, Nero's mistress after he'd killed his wife. This film was completed before the Hays Code came into force, so DeMille was able to play up the risque elements of his story. Popeye's bath in sow's milk is just one of many eye-popping moments. Colbert is great in her role, and Charles Laughton as Nero makes the most of Nero's effeminate, vainglorious character. Unfortunately, they're in the film for far too short a period, and most of it is taken up with Frederick March's obsession with a Christian beauty. The final third is set in the Colosseum, where various spectacles are shown prior to the Christians being thrown to the lions, including alligators about to devour a naked girl, an ape about to rape another, and elephants crushing the skulls of pygmies. There are some great snippets of crowd conversations too, including a woman complaining to her husband that their seats are far too far away to see anything. This film set a benchmark for what was to come, and most Swords and Sandals films involve the formula of A, persecution of the Christians, B, a love affair, and C, a spell of action in the Colosseum. In 1949, the Italians made Fabiola, concerning the love between Fabius's daughter Fabiola and a slave-turned-gladiator called Rual. Michel Simon is great as Fabius, who recognises the growing influence of the Christian faith and would like to incorporate it into the Roman way of life. Then he gets bumped off and Rual is suspected. The final set-to between the Christians and the lions in the Colosseum is quite spectacular, complete with crucifixions and giant pyres. This production helped restore Italian cinema after the war and paved the way for lavish Hollywood productions in Cinecittà, the studios outside Rome, later on. Alessandro Blasetti directed, and the score was by Enzo Mazzetti. Then in 1952, director Mervyn LeRoy brought us Quo Vadis, starring Robert Taylor as a conquering commander who returns to Rome and falls for a, yes, you guessed it, a Christian, played by Deborah Kerr. The production is lavish and Peter Ustinov does well in ample screen time as Nero. LeRoy was happy to dwell on Nero's character at length to bring into focus the vanity and brutal hubris of Rome's ruling elite. Deborah Kerr looks great but is a bit disappointing. Robert Taylor carries the film with his commanding presence across its nearly 3 hours of screen time. Leo Genn is very good as Nero's advisor Petronius and got his only Oscar nomination. The film cost $7 million and grossed $21 million. It was shot in post-war Italy, where the Cinecittà studios could provide cheap labour. There were 30,000 extras used, and the film was nominated for 8 Oscars. To put a perspective on things, this film was originally planned in the 1930s, starring Robert Taylor, but was put on hold whilst the Second World War came and went. Shooting took over a year, and the film was the highest-grossing US film in 1952. Miklos Roza wrote the score. Fast forward to 1960, when Stanley Kubrick brought us Spartacus with Kirk Douglas playing a gladiator who leads a revolt against the Roman Republic. Tony Curtis and Laurence Olivier also starred. This film has an impressive cast list: Charles Laughton, Peter Ustinov, Gene Simmons, Herbert Lom, Nina Fock, John Ireland, John Dahl, and even Charles McGraw and Woody Strode. Kirk Douglas was the producer, and he assembled the cast by showing each of them a different script with their part beefed up. Every one of Hollywood's 187 stuntmen were used in the film, which had a cast of 10,500 people. What a lot of people don't know is that Stanley Kubrick was brought in as a replacement for director Anthony Mann, who Kirk Douglas had fired early on. Douglas had worked with the young Kubrick on Paths of Glory a few years earlier and was suitably impressed with him. The film runs at just over 3 hours and won 4 Oscars and remains one of the foremost Swords and Sandals achievements. It became the most expensive film made up to that point and became the highest-grossing film in the US and Canada in 1960. Russell Mettie won an Oscar for the cinematography, which in reality was done by Kubrick, who was himself a cinematographer. Alex North wrote the score. Thank you. The following year, Richard Fleischer directed Anthony Quinn in Barabbas, which followed the criminal's fictional life after he is released by Pontius Pilate instead of Christ, based on a Nobel Prize-winning novel. Fleischer did a great job, and Quinn is excellent as Barabbas in probably his best role, haunted throughout by his experience of having had contact with the Son of God, and his life seems to be charmed from then on. As he thwarts death, he plays the lost but chosen man perfectly. He's put to work in the salt mines in Sicily, where he becomes attached, literally, to Vittorio Gassman, playing Sahak, a Christian slave. A solar eclipse just happened to be due during the shooting schedule, so Fleischer used the real eclipse. Amazing. Jack Palance plays the gladiator Torvald and steals the film as he takes on Barabbas in the Colosseum. Worth watching for this scene alone. Sharon Tate made her uncredited debut in this film in the Colosseum crowd and had a fling with Jack Palance at the same time. What a talented girl. Mario Nasimbini wrote the score. It's thought with the help of Ennio Morricone. By this time, the genre had well and truly taken off, and Anthony Mann took a stab at The Fall of the Roman Empire in 1964. Here we have Alec Guinness playing Marcus Aurelius in failing health, with his son Commodus, played by Christopher Plummer, waiting in the wings to take over, but he would prefer Livius, played by Stephen Boyd, to be his heir. His daughter Lucilla, Sophia Loren, is the only person who knows this when he dies. James Mason is convincing as Thumonides, his advisor. Are you keeping up? Livius is sent all over the place to fight in support of Commodus's rule and keep him in power, while he gets to believe he's a god. Christopher Plummer does a fine job as the evil emperor Commodus, but Sophia Loren just doesn't quite cut the ice as the love of Livius. This is a massive 190 minutes, but it's well put together and there are some genuinely fine moments. Many of the larger crowd scenes remind me of Peter Bruegel compositions in their complexity, courtesy of the cinematography of Robert Krasker, who also worked on El Cid, Brief Encounter and The Third Man. The Oscar-nominated score was by Dmitry Tiomkin. Now it's time to talk about everyone's favourite Swords and Sandals film, Ridley Scott's Gladiator from 2000, which helped reignite interest in the genre after a fallow period of 36 years. It cost an astounding $100 million, but made the budget back in a mere 2 weeks. It won 5 Oscars and had another 7 nominations, but surprisingly Ridley Scott didn't win for Best Director, although it won Best Picture. Russell Crowe and Joaquin Phoenix picked up Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor. It was Oliver Reed's final picture, and Richard Harris died 2 years later. It begins the same way as The Fall of the Roman Empire does, with Marcus Aurelius, an excellent Richard Harris, a sick man who doesn't want his son Commodus to take over from him, preferring Maximus. That's just about where the similarity ends between the two films. Scott's direction puts you right on the ground in the story, and the performances of everyone are great. But I found Zimmer's soundtrack dull and unimaginative, apart from the well-known theme with Lisa Gerrard. There's no doubt that the high production values of the film and its high acclaim have paved the way for a steady trickle of Swords and Sandals films since it was released. Foremost amongst these is Troy, released in 2004. Running at a massive 163 minutes, it's directed by Wolfgang Petersen, who gave us Das Boot in 1981 and Outbreak in 1995, which I've spoken about before. It's vast and entertaining. The cast is impressive, featuring Brad Pitt, Orlando Bloom, Eric Bana, Julian Glover, and Brian Cox, to name a few. Some artistic license has been employed, and at the end it says, inspired by Homer's Iliad. Brad Pitt's performance, I thought, was underrated, and Orlando Bloom suffers from an underwritten part. It got just a single Oscar nod for costume design, which is highly surprising considering its $200 million budget. Interestingly, Petersen had been offered Gladiator, but had turned it down, and he replaced, wait for it, Christopher Nolan as director of Troy, and that may provide some background and motivation for Nolan's upcoming film of The Odyssey. So there you have it. Apart from Troy, all of my selections deal with the events around the birth of Christianity, and doesn't touch at all the other multitude of Swords and Sandals films that concern other stories. Looks like there's room for another visit to this genre at some point in the future. Let's have a listen to the full-blown version of Now We Are Free from Gladiator. Thanks for listening.